This is the song of your people, isn't it, Tom?
Sure, why not?
I don't know if you guys know this, but I like to say congratulations to Tom, who's going to be a father.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Which would make me a grandfather.
Yeah, and under positive circumstances. This was not a Maury show situation, yeah.
Oh, so. Just wait and see.
Yeah, I mean,
remember
I guess.
Remember when I was in New York?
My wife got pregnant on her honeymoon, so I think, yeah, very unlikely there's a...
Jesus, Tom, like this is the American dream
a
right here.
A Maury show in our future, but this, yeah, we'll find out.
This is the American dream. This guy, oh yeah, we got married, we're looking to buy a house, went on our honeymoon, and now we're having a kid. Like, did you, never mind. We just get into the boxing.
Cause there's, sure,
as
sure.
If that wasn't weird enough, we'll talk about this Pacquiao Matisse fight. So we've been back. I had a real busy couple of weeks, so didn't get an episode out. But if you are a Patreon subscriber, never stop putting content out there. That's something that, you know, if you want more boxing content, more relevant to, I should say, like today's news, something like that, that would be a good thing for you to do. Go over to patreon.com/sundaypuncher. But let's talk about this Pacquiao and Matisse fight. I'll let you lead this off because it seemed like when we talked before the recording started, you had a lot to say that you didn't want to say. So I'm going to tell you right now, you got to say it. You got to say it. There's shoot hard, brother.
I'm going to avoid some nuclear hot takes.
Well, you could give them and just know that I'm going to put you in your place.
Sure. We'll circle around if we, I think lot to talk about with this fight. I think it was, I mean, God, there's everything related to the crazy, like, promotion of it where so many boxing writers absolutely buried Manny Pacquiao. You know, the build up to the fight varied from just no interest whatsoever, which was, I mean, my God, the amount of posts on Reddit for it was roughly similar to the average showbox card. I could not believe the apathy for the fight. And multiple boxing writers wrote basically hit pieces on Manny Pacquiao talking about, you know, people he had screwed over, money he had blown on
Shills.
Gambling. I mean,
like Kevin Ioli wrote a hit piece on Manny Pacquiao. Funny how that works.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is crazy. The longer you're around this sport, you realize like there are people who have like weird, seemingly unexplained allegiances to promoters where it's like, what does this have to do with boxing fans? You know, it's like, oh, God, this is a whole long topic. But I mean, here, even just like, how can we bury Manny Pacquiao to the benefit of his former promoter, or, you know, still semi-involved promoter? Like, anyway, weird stuff. But yeah, as far as the fight, I mean, going into it, when I wanted to check out, you know, I was looking forward to the fight. You know, I have my ESPN Plus subscription when I turned it on. I thought the most likely outcome was a Pacquiao decision in not a very exciting fight between old guys.
Yep.
And I thought any version, you know, that was the most likely. Let's say if that's an 80% chance, anything besides that would be interesting. You know, if Matisse got any version of a decision would be interesting. If Matisse knocked out Pacquiao, that would definitely be a story, certainly. And if Pacquiao knocked out Matisse, it would be interesting. Because already you're starting to think about, you know, where does Pacquiao go from here now that he has a knockout? I mean, I thought it was hilarious, and then I'll throw it back to you. But something I thought was hilarious this morning was seeing after, like, total apathy all week, seeing all of these Pacquiao homers who haven't been on the sub, like people who aren't regular posters on Reddit Boxing, came out of the woodwork to celebrate how excited they were for Pacquiao's win last night. I mean, all of these just like, well, and I have nothing else to say, but yeah, people who are more of Pacquiao fans than boxing fans who, you know, weren't there in the build up to the fight, but definitely were there afterwards. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how excited they are about Pacquiao's career going forward. Anyway, I mean, what's your first take?
Well, I want to respond something to you said about the writers putting out hit pieces, because that certainly did happen. It's something I noticed when I see Kevin Ioli putting out a hit piece on Manny Pacquiao. That does lead me to think that he was fed a story, or at least there was something there. And it's funny that Ioli would destroy a top ranked fighter only when that fighter is no longer officially fighting under the top ranked banner. Now, specifically, also about writers that I want to mention.
Yeah, I'm going to have to follow up on this, by the way. I have more to say about it. Anyway, continue. Yeah.
Well, I maybe what you're about to say is going to be irrelevant after this point, because I think we're going to see a lot of writers now come out of the woodwork, just as you said about the fans. And the reason, so first of all, the Pacquiao fans never left. Those Pacquiao fans, obviously not the Filipino contingent, like that massive Filipino contingent that everyone thinks was out there, which actually wasn't out there. You know, that's a myth, I think, that Manny Pacquiao was popular because Filipino people ordered pay-per-views and stuff. Maybe a portion of it, but I think more it was, there was a lot of Mexican fans who respected what Manny Pacquiao did in the ring, and that was just the same boxing audience that, or yeah, the same boxing audience that we've, that's already there, still there, and has been there. But anyway, those guys are coming back. You know, those guys have just recently been supporting Golovkin and Lomachenko, and now they're coming back to the original, their original, I don't know what you want to call it, but they're coming back to Pacquiao. They never left. They're just back.
Yeah, and, they're homeboy.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, and you and I both understand this, because obviously one of the things that we look for is like, what are our target demographics? What should we talk about? Like, what do the people who most likely would listen to our podcast or read our stuff, what do they want to hear? And with the outpouring of Manny Pacquiao support that has not been there, and notice how that stopped being there once he stopped winning, is now back, and now we will see these glowing pieces again, because writers are trying to target the enthusiastic fans so that they can click and listen and blah, blah, blah. Now, Tom, obviously you don't subscribe to that, because based off of what you told me earlier, you just don't care about his fans, but we can get to that.
Sorry, I'm not sure where you're letting me off here to pick up. But
yeah, wherever you want.
I was just going to finish the point I was trying to say before regarding the hit pieces and like what seemed almost like talking points. Like Lance Pugmire wrote a piece this week about Freddie Roach. Basically Pacquiao abandoned Freddie Roach. Like, woe is Freddie Roach. Meanwhile, like, Freddie Roach is, you know, multi-millionaire. I mean, it's unfortunate he has health problems, but yeah, I mean, his training career is definitely in a decline as he's gotten older and his health has gotten worse. But, you know, talking, I mean, something that they, Lance Pugmire mentioned in the article was that Freddie Roach's mother, who had been fixture of his gym, passed away, around Christmas time, and Pacquiao didn't call Freddie Roach.
Oh, man.
I heard that.
They said that on the telecast, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I heard that from so many different boxing writers went out of their way to call that out. I mean, that is like, I mean, my God. I mean, this is like pro wrestling. Like, how can we, you know, bury this guy? Like, the heel manager coming on and calling that out or something. Like, I mean, such a salacious detail. And yeah, they talked about it on the broadcast. Like, I heard multiple boxing writers talk about it on podcasts. I mean, it really... Yeah, it felt like the top rank talking point, like anti Pacquiao talking points were out there.
To add to that,
very strange.
That narrative that you're bringing up, it does seem like that was just something that they were doing, because you had that, and then you also had Mark Kriegel just go out of his way to say, "Oh yeah, Pacquiao's not fighting in America because, you know, he hasn't paid his taxes."
Yeah,
he owes the IRS $20 million, and it's like, dude, you didn't need to get into the details. Like, come on, let this might be the last time we ever see Manny Pacquiao fight. Like, just let him ride.
Yeah, I mean, oh God. So I'll now, if we're gonna pivot off of that, I'll pick up on your next point as far as like boxing writers will come out of the woodwork. I thought it was funny. I mean, there are a few things. One, I mean, we're hardcore boxing fans, and we've got, you know, podcasts to do here, so we watched the fight. But, you know, can't forget this was on ESPN Plus. It was from Malaysia. There was so little coverage of this. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, even compared to the Jeff Horn fight, I mean, this wasn't just like minimal for a Manny Pacquiao fight. This was minimal for any, like, compared to like premium cable in the United States. I mean, I didn't see a huge big footprint afterwards. I mean, you'll have to think afterwards. So yeah, I'll let you go. But I mean, there are some clear fights that this sets up. And even that, like, you haven't really heard the drum banging. Anyway, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, to add, or, you know, you said there was not much coverage. Well, yeah, because the fight's in Malaysia. Now, interestingly enough, Pacquiao has fought outside of America before. And those fights got more coverage. The reason being, one, you had a narrative to push in boxing in China and going to Macau and blah, blah, blah. But the other thing was Top Rank wasn't footing the bill to fly out writers like they were in the past.
I mean, this fight was barely, you know, promoted. I mean, that's something that's a topic of a lot of discussion. Like, what does the promoter do in all of this piece, all the PBC guys who don't have a promoter? I mean, this fight was not promoted, and there was not really, like, PR people to I mean, you know, like, PBC, they technically don't have promoters, but they have, like, a PR firm actively they work with. I mean, this was not promoted. You know, ESPN even just did the bare minimum of coverage. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so no, that was just all I was going to say, just adding to your point there, or at least providing some more background or some context to what you're saying. But I think we can get into the fight more specifically now.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your next little hot take that you want to throw out here?
Oh, I mean, I don't really have a hot take, but I think the next thing I'm really interested to see is where people rank Pacquiao at 147 now, because
that's
for the
irrelevant.
Last...
He's no good.
Well,
kidding,
I would say
kidding,
that.
Kidding, kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
No, I would say that. I mean, I think, you know, for the last year or so, there's been a talk that there's kind of this top heavy welterweight division that you have Keith Thurman, Errol Spence on top. Then Terrence Crawford joined. He instantly became in that mix. You can decide where you want to rank those three guys. And then immediately before them is Danny Garcia and Sean Porter. And then people have just kind of viewed everyone else as being, you know, a clear rung below them. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see who is trying, you know, exactly. Like, I mean, that's a huge question of who in the boxing media, and then to some extent the fanboys, but really in the boxing media, who is going to be pushing for Pacquiao? I mean, are they going to say now he's in the top five? Or are they going to say he displaces Sean Porter and or Danny Garcia? Are they going to say he's in the top three somewhere, that he would be, you know, an even fight for Keith Thurman, Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence? I mean, it'll be really interesting to see where people try to position him now. Anyway, yeah, your thoughts?
If you are one of those people that think now Manny Pacquiao sits in the top five at welterweight, that's a dangerous, dangerous view to have. If you're someone in power, now as a fan, I can understand how you could feel about that, but I'm not really going to buy that from the top, you know, people who could actually match make. And I'm sure Manny Pacquiao doesn't feel that way. He fought Lucas Matisse for a world title. There were numerous other fights that he could have done.
WBA regular title.
Yeah, but 20 years from now, we're not going to talk about whether or not it was a regular title. It's just going to say world title and on BoxRec. So
be like, well, it was a regular title. There's nothing wrong with that.
I have a 10-year, 15-year view of some of these things, because, you know, this is how things are going to be remembered when you're arguing about this with your son, or your, you know, some, you know, when you're that
yeah,
old
we
guy
don't know
on
yet.
Reddit.
Yep.
And I'm talking to you, listener, too. You know, when you introduce your kids to boxing and they want to argue that Manny Pacquiao wasn't as good as, you know, the new welterweight kid that comes up, and you're just like, this guy sucks. You know, he's no Manny Pacquiao. He dominate, blah, blah, blah. Okay. You're going to have to go back and say, well, Pacquiao won a world title at 39 years old. So, but putting that aside, okay. Manny Pacquiao could have taken a bunch of different fights. And he specifically targeted Lucas Matisse because he had a title. Now, obviously, we know that title is meaningless, but it's a world title, okay? And if that's the case, then they could have taken any other fight. I kind of lost where I was going with this. But the point is, it's dangerous to put Manny Pacquiao in the conversation of the guys at the top five, because those fights don't end well for Pacquiao. I mean, he struggled with Jeff Horn. Think about that. Jeff Horn was able to bully him. Manny Pacquiao is a small welterweight. The welterweights now are big. You don't have Floyd Mayweather, who doesn't rehydrate much anymore. You now have a division at welterweight that's just like every other division, where to be the best is to have a weight advantage. Pacquiao can't step into the ring with Errol Spence if Spence is going to weigh 158 on fight night. And that's only an 11 pounds of rehydration, okay? Only 11 pounds. That's not much. It's probably about average. But even then, Pacquiao steps into the ring with him, and that does not end well. So I'm looking at welterweight, and it's like Manny Pacquiao, he gets a spot at welterweight. You know, he gets to sit at the table, but it's more of an honorary spot. You can't actually put him there because of, like, you think he's going to beat everyone. Because if you look at, like, just BoxRec's top 10, Does Manny Pacquiao win a rematch with Jesse Vargas?
Yeah, I mean, do we really need to belabor this point? I would hope our readers don't put him in the top five. I just meant more as a hypothetical, if anyone would.
I mean, the question I have, because I don't really care where he's rated. I know who can beat him. I know who is probably going to beat him. And I know who he probably beats. And the list gets smaller and smaller as you go down. The question, though, is, so for his next fight, there's Amir Khan, which was mentioned as a potential opponent, and that was from him. Would you take, if you were to bet, would you bet Amir Khan or the field?
I actually don't know what that means, but
the field means every other person out there.
I'm embarrassed here. I'm really not getting what you're saying. But regarding Pacquiao
so basically
versus Khan,
you are gonna. What do you think is more likely, that Pacquiao will fight Amir Khan or he will fight any other person?
Oh, I thought you meant the outcome of that fight. I think that's extremely likely.
So you would take Khan.
They would pick up the rights on DAZN. They could do the fight in England even. You avoid the tax problem that we, as well as many boxing writers, mentioned. Yeah, that seems extremely likely.
But the question is, like, okay, Pacquiao did this fight in Malaysia and specifically didn't want Bob Arum involved. What's to say that Arum, who actually ended up airing the fight on ESPN Plus at the end, what's to say that Arum doesn't have some clause or something still that exists that he gets the rights to Manny Pacquiao in America?
Right. You beat me to saying that. Yeah, I think that's really the caveat, if he still has some type of option on that. I think if not, I think we'll get into this later in the podcast, but DAZN and, well, at least Matchroom USA, Eddie Hearn's part of that deal, is going to be star for content. So yeah, I would view that as very likely. But yeah, that would definitely be a huge hang up if they hold that broadcast right. But again, Matchroom did a card on ESPN Plus earlier in the year, actually, with Amir Khan. So yeah, they're primarily trying to fill their DAZN channel, but I don't think he would pass up that fight. I mean, that would be a big fight in the UK. I still think that's likely to happen.
I wonder if they would be willing to make a fight with Mike Alvarado, do it in Mexico.
Yeah, but I think there's so much more money for an Amir Khan fight, though.
Oh, for sure. I agree with that. I'm pretty sure.
I think
that there's
like
a ton of money for that fight.
More than five times more money. That's not true because Pacquiao stole the main draw, but still, I think Pacquiao paired with Khan still does, a lot more money with Amir Khan, especially, again, you do the fight in UK. UK, you're still avoiding this the tax, much discussed tax problem. So, yeah. I don't know. Are there any other potential opponents you'd want to talk about, though? I just think that's the most likely. It just seems to make the most sense.
Naturally, I think it makes the most sense. And the only way that you could this fight in and of itself, we have Manny Pacquiao versus Amir Khan, and they both have names, so it will sell a little bit. Okay. But I'm thinking of, like, how do we take this from a good selling fight to a great selling fight? I think that Amir Khan, during their first press conference, he needs to bring Freddie Roach out and say, Freddie Roach is going to train me for this fight.
Freddie Roach's entrance music plays.
Exactly.
While Pacquiao's on while Amir Khan's on the mic.
You want storylines in boxing. That's how things are, like, that's how you sell stuff. Hey, that works for me. Do you think that Manny Pacquiao deserves credit for putting in a great performance last night, or do you think we should be talking about the fact that
I have to throw in this tag. Khan unbuttons his suit and he's got a t-shirt with the picture of Freddie Roach's mom on it.
Oh, God.
He dedicates the fight to Freddie Roach's mom.
Yeah, see, there's all kinds of stuff that he could bring Alex Ariza in for strength and conditioning.
Who would be the heel manager in this scenario? Yeah. Well, anyway, sorry, I'm having way too much fun with this, but yeah.
Boxing doesn't have to be what it always is. Boxing could be fun sometimes. Most people, a lot of boxers, they just want to fight. Like, they don't really have the imagination for this stuff. And what's interesting is that those guys that have the imagination for it, yeah, they tend to be the biggest earners. You know, the Floyd Mayweathers, the David Hayes, like these guys who make money using their basically the theatrics and showmanship. So, but who, back to my question, who deserves credit here? Manny Pacquiao for great performance or Matisse for being so bad?
Sure. So I'm going to answer this this way. A few years ago, Showtime had some anniversary. They brought back a bunch of their old fights, and I rewatched, it might have been the first time I saw it, but anyway, Ray Leonard versus Terry Norris. And it was interesting watching that fight because, like, I had always heard about it as, you know, oh, it's terrible to see Leonard get beaten up by Terry Norris. You know, it was really sad to see him so diminished. This was, like, much later on in Ray Leonard's career. But, you know, I watched the fight. It was reasonably competitive. Ray Leonard still, you know, looks like Ray Leonard. I mean, he still looks young now, even since he's been retired for more than 20 years. And, yeah, it still looks like some version of himself, a little competitive, but it just, you sort of leave feeling like, wow, like Terry Norris is so good. He beat Ray Leonard. He still looked like an approximation of himself. And in this fight, like Pacquiao still looked like an approximation of himself. I mean, it wasn't like the Jeff Horn fight where, you know, again, he lost that fight, so it's not a perfect comparison, but he looked so much slower than he had been. He looked like he was getting hit by shots by Horn that he shouldn't have gotten hit by. I mean, this looked like Manny Pacquiao circa the Jesse Vargas fight. Now, I would say that was, you know, sort of what the eyes tell you, but really, if you look at how diminished Lucas Matisse was, I mean, it's a rational interpretation of this is really Pacquiao still incredibly faded. He's not, you know, any bit better than he was in the Jeff Horn fight, especially now that he's under the the esteemed tutelage of Boo Boy. So I think it was really a question of absolutely washed Lucas Matisse. I mean, Matisse has looked terrible in recent years. He looked terrible in his fight against Tiwa Karam, where, you know, he looked terrible throughout the fight, and then he even looked terrible when there was that weird phantom knockout where he landed threw a jab, and then a few beats later, Kiram just fell to the ground. So, I'm not sold here, but, you know, it was perfectly serviceable performance. I mean, Lord knows if you looked at the reaction of the Manny Pacquiao fans in attendance who were going nuts looking at the Manny Pacquiao fans who have come out of the woodwork. I mean, they got a version of the Manny Pacquiao they wanted. And if this is what his retirement tour continues to be, that he's fighting other, like, faded guys, I mean, Lord knows we talk about the washed welterweight series. I mean, if he wants to keep fighting lower-level guys, guys outside of the top 15, he can probably continue to win, look like some version of what his fans want. So it will be interesting, though, if he does try to go for a big payday, which is invariably what boxers do. I mean, if he had had this win, or I mean, just imagine a few years ago, if Matisse had not lost if he hadn't lost a few years ago against Victor Postol, yeah, I mean, that was supposed to set up a Pacquiao fight. If he had had a Pacquiao fight then, if he had knocked out Matisse then, we might have gotten another Mayweather fight. You know, that might have been the knockout people wanted. I think now they're so diminished. It was on ESPN Plus. It was in Malaysia. I mean, this means so little now, but yeah, thought it was interesting. I mean, again, doesn't put him in the top five, but could keep his retirement tour rolling. I mean, it definitely will. Anyway, your thoughts?
I have to derail this conversation because you keep bringing up this ESPN Plus thing, and this is not a downgrade. This is not a bad thing. This is not ESPN not caring. This is not Top Rank not caring.
Less than 50,000 people watch the
It's a narrative that keeps getting repeated, like Tom is doing right now, that is just incorrect. Your numbers might be right, although there's nothing confirmed about the numbers, but your mindset, the perspective, is false. Because you have to look at how ESPN views ESPN Plus right now. They're putting a lot into ESPN Plus, and they specifically targeted boxing and MMA as products to place on ESPN Plus for a very specific reason. They are looking to have the most hardcore of hardcore fan bases who are going to subscribe to ESPN Plus. They're trying to reach basically people who will keep their subscriptions. And boxing does numbers that ESPN so far is very satisfied with. they're trying to reach the UFC, who does good enough numbers that if those people sign up for ESPN Plus, it's a big win for ESPN Plus. And you have to look at the 5-year plans or maybe the 10-year plan of ESPN, where yeah, it's $4.99 right now, but what happens when those, you know, let's say they get 2 million subscribers, those 2 million subscribers has their fees bumped all the way up to $10 a month. You know, do the math on that. That's $20 million, I believe, a month, just from their online subscription. And the point being that ESPN needs, like, they asked for Crawford's fight to be on ESPN Plus. The reason being, they want these fights that are going to force people, hardcore boxing fans, to sign up for their service. So while far fewer people probably watch this fight than Manny Pacquiao's ever had watched his fights, at least since he's become a star in, 2003? But it's not a whole, like, a loss, like, in total. If you look at it in, like, the grand scheme of things, ESPN is happy, Top Rank is happy because they're making ESPN happy, and Manny Pacquiao doesn't have to pay taxes. Like, everyone wins.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to jump in very quickly. I mean, I was saying that in very specific context, which is we always talk about this, and I always talk about this specifically. Like, you talk about the bump a fighter will get from a fight. You can see that show up in, like, Google Trend numbers, which is a representation of the internet traffic. You can see it show up in social media numbers. And I just was saying, as a result of it being on ESPN Plus, and as a result of the weird coverage this fight got from, you know, again, being in sort of the summer during vacation month, this is not prime boxing season. You know, all of those combination of factors, like the benefit to Pacquiao will be greatly muted. I think that's pretty inarguable. But yeah, I mean, it's a separate point. ESPN is trying to push boxing stuff, but that's not really the point that I was trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, look, right now is when ESPN needs content. You know, you're going into the dog days of summer. You're going into no NFL, no NBA. The NBA is dying down after summer league ends. NFL won't pick up. College football won't pick up. So they need something. And if boxing can fill part of that void, I'm sure that they would be thrilled. And they're really trying to grow ESPN Plus. You know, Jimmy Pitaro is the new president of ESPN. John Skipper extorted in this cocaine plot, and who's now also running DAZN with Eddie Hearn's new boss.
Well, he has some involvement there. Yeah, he was at the press conference. I think details to be determined, but yeah.
I'd find it hard to believe they'd bring him in for anything other than to be the president of the company, or at least their sports, or whatever they're trying to do over there. But, you know, Pitaro's made it clear that he wants to grow the online presence and switch to streaming. And, you know, it's smart. If you look at the landscape, you have the WWE Network as a barometer of what this could be, the success and the foresight that they had in buying up libraries everywhere. If you don't know what I'm talking about, they spent years and years and years buying up every library of every promotion they could find, so that when they launched this service, anything you wanted to watch, no matter when you grew up, whatever you watched locally as a kid, you could go onto their network and watch it. And it may not actually be WWE. It could be not even WCW, but, like, I don't know, some smaller promotion.
Mid-Atlantic wrestling.
Yeah, that's Houston there. Wrestling, yeah. And it's like, you know, that took foresight that I'm sure very few people could have thought of. I mean, geez, can you imagine? Do you remember your views on YouTube when YouTube first launched? I hated YouTube.
Well, again, to that point, I was. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I don't want to belabor this too much, but yeah, I was just referring to the impact, the benefit, relative benefit of this knockout to Pacquiao's career compared to, you know, if it had been in the U.S. on a real network, you know, not on a July weekend where no one is paying attention to boxing. But
well,
yeah.
I think the problem with this, because we've seen people on obscure cards, we're going to talk about them later, Murat Gassiev's knockout of Jordan Schimmel. We've seen small cards that were watched by 200,000 people on Fox Sports 1 get major coverage. And the reason being, there was something that you can put in a highlight clip or in a GIF. And this Pacquiao fight was missing that explosive moment.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I thought you were going the opposite direction. Yeah, are people going to be looking at the highlight of the fifth round when Matisse went down after no punch was landed?
Yeah, so that...
or seemingly so, no punch. I'm, you know,
that's
we were talking
your hot take
quickly.
That I was hoping you'd say like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, we were talking about
like
it before. I actually messed up the recording for a minute because I was I'm downloading a high res version of the fight. I want to actually check that out, and you know, I'll have a GIF of that one way or the other on Monday. I'm sort of looking forward to posting on the thread on Reddit a knockdown highlight clip, potentially where no punch landed. So we'll see what that ends up looking like.
Well, so you think that a punch didn't land there. I'm not sure if you watched this on a 240p stream or not, but I was watching on ESPN Plus and it was pretty good quality. And what I saw is moments before Matisse took that knee, he got hit with the right hook. Now, it wasn't a huge right hook, but it was a right hook. And my theory on that is that that right hook hit him in the eye. And his vision went blurry for a few seconds.
He did have that injured eye from the postal fight, right? So
yeah, and he
that's
nearly went blind, okay? He nearly went blind.
Well, we don't really know the severity of the injury, but yeah, I seem to have an eye injury in that fight.
Well, that's what he was saying afterwards, that he was blurry and that he could have lost his vision and stuff like that, and that's why he took that long break. And I think that things might have got blurry for him at that moment, and he thought the best thing to do was to take a knee, just as he did in the postal fight. So that's why I think that if you think that maybe that wasn't on the up and up, I think maybe we should take into consideration that, Kell Brook wasn't hit with the biggest punch when he took a knee against Spence. But I'm sure that that eye was starting to come into play. And not to say he didn't take big punches, because he did. And certainly Matisse took some big punches. Pacquiao did land some nice shots in that fight. But we don't quite know the state of his eye in this fight. And we haven't seen him get hit since the postal fight.
That's a good point. I mean,
landed jabs and that was it.
I'll wait until I go through the frame by frame. that's why I didn't mention it already. I don't want it to jump to conclusions here, but yeah, we'll see. I didn't see anything after the fight with him complaining about it. By the way, another just on this topic of Top Rank snubbing Pacquiao, they didn't send out any kind of post-fight press release. I'm just looking at my inbox.
Didn't promote the fight.
They have a press. Well, it went on ESPN Plus. I didn't get anything about it. Yeah, so
it's possible that if anyone was going to release a press release, it would come straight from ESPN Media Zone, but also possible that ESPN just really doesn't care.
I mean,
I'm sorry,
it's
not
all
ESPN,
over.
But Top Rank doesn't care.
Well, it's like it's not an absence of caring. I think they actively are trying to bury the interest in the fight, which, yeah, points more to Pacquiao no longer having an ongoing affiliation with them. Anyway, do you have more to say about that fight? I feel like we've gone in so many different directions about it.
No, I'm fine with where we've gotten, though. We should talk briefly about the Progre fight and then the Lopez fight, which I think both went down exactly as you would think that they would have gone down. But do you have any take about of the Progre and Velasco fight?
Yeah, so we'll just go over that first. I'd like to spend a few minutes on each of those guys. So Regis Progre fight, I mean, he's my clear number one at 140, but I think this fight illustrates, I mean, if you look through Progre's resume, I mean, this is still the resume of a prospect waiting to fight for a title outside of, you know, the weird thing of the Ndongo fight where Ndongo somehow found himself a unified champion at 140, even though I think we agree at this point, not really that great of a fighter. But he doesn't, outside of Ndongo, he has no former champions, no current champions, not even any like washed old title holders. I mean, his resume is super thin. I mean, he's passed every test that he's been presented with, but it still looks like the resume of a fighter who's really coming up. And by the way, as you always point out, I mean, it's curious when you have a 29-year-old prospect, essentially. So he's my number one, but that really points to how kind of tremendously unproven the 140 division is. It's like Josh Taylor doesn't really have a better argument. Lord knows, I mean, I think it's crazy that so many people try to put Jose Ramirez as number two. I mean, that just doesn't – there's no argument for that. I mean, it makes no sense. He has nothing on his resume that would warrant that. I mean, BoxRec's algorithm puts him at 17, which is a lot closer to where he belongs than number two, even if he's, you know, somewhere in the top 10. So anyway, yeah, I like Progre. This was not a significant win. He still has a pretty thin resume, but I still think he's the number one guy at 140, and I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, if you talk about a guy with a thin resume, the World Boxing Super Series is something that fans can really look forward to. I favor him going into that. I don't think it's a sure thing that he wins, but even if he does end up winning as I expect, he's going to rack up some really nice wins along the way. Not the worst thing to have him showcased against some, you know, pretty solid opponents. Your take on the Progre fight?
I don't really have a take on this fight. Like, it was like, what did you expect? Did you expect Velasco to have a chance? When you bring in a guy who's 21-0, and he's got a bunch of knockouts, but he's only fought in Argentina or Spain or the Dominican Republic, any, you know, any country that's not like a hotbed of boxing, and or he's faced the same type of opponent mostly. You know, you could say the same thing about British prospects who've only beaten British prospects. That doesn't do much for you. You know, Marcos Maidana this isn't the best analogy that I'm going to make here, but Marcos Maidana, they sent him over to Germany to get seasoning early in his career in a prospect phase. Why did they do that? Because they knew that would improve him. And if you look at his career, it worked. And so you bring in a guy like Velasco, and it's like, this guy has no chance at beating a Progre. Now, did he make a good account of himself? Yeah, I think so. I think Velasco earned some respect, both from, hopefully, the viewer, and certainly from Progre. I think Progre had something to think about with this guy. He did push Progre a little bit. Now, that's not to say that Progre was like... threatened by him or challenged by him in any way. I don't think so. But, you know, you don't have to lose rounds or get dropped or something to be challenged in a fight. I think it was a good fight for Progre, that Progre ultimately did exactly what he was supposed to do. I think Progre could have got him out of there much earlier. If you see early in the fight, Velasco was unwilling to not protect the left side of his body. He kept that elbow real tight to the right side, and that's probably because he didn't like getting hit there. And funny enough, the moment that he gets hit there, he goes down. So Progre is going to the World Boxing Super Series. On paper, he should be the number one guy. I don't know if I can't definitively say he's number one. I can only say I think he's number one, but not for sure that he actually is. Just because you're right, none of these guys at 140 have proven anything.
Yeah, it's amazing how wide open it is. And that's where I'll say again, I mean, I tried to be very deliberate in how I framed the fight. I mean, I view this really basically as like a prospect development fight, which is weird where you're talking about him being the best guy in the division.
It was also a holding pattern fight because they knew he was going to go into the World Boxing Super Series, and they knew there was no way that they wanted to risk him losing before he went into the tournament. So you bring in a guy like Velasco, who on paper, the ESPN commentators can sell to the casual fan as like a solid opponent for
Progre. Yeah, I want to get into that topic related to Teofimo Lopez, but that's probably about as much as we need to say about Progre. I mean, I like him a lot, heavily untested, 140, as much as I have as the top guy. It's really like no one has any, but that's the thing, just to be clear what I mean about Velasco. He's, depending on how you'd want to consider it, probably the first, second, you know, he's like top three out of Progre's wins. He might be his best win. You know, depending on how you want to rate Ndongo. I mean, definitely people would consider Ndongo higher because he had, you know, he was unified and he fought Crawford. But, I mean, Velasco, from the fights I've seen, he gave him Progre probably his best performance. Progre had to do the most in this fight that I've seen in any of his fights.
Yeah, this is probably Progre's first fight where he's really had to do something other than just blast someone out of there.
Yeah, basically. You know, and it's not like he's knocked out every single opponent, but... just in terms of what he actually had to do. Like, I mean, if you go back to 2015, he had a distance fight that was on Showbox. But we can pivot over to
Teofimo Lopez.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to start off on him?
Yeah, I thought that it was a good fight for Lopez. Silva is clearly not that great of a fighter, but Lopez did exactly what you want to see a fighter do given this platform, because they could have easily put Eric De Leon on the card. I mean, De Leon's fought on ESPN on the main card before, and then he had a draw with Andy Ventis and was relegated to being on the untelevised undercard. So this could have easily been Eric De Leon's spot, and it makes sense because De Leon, like, to be in this position, De Leon is a Mexican fighter. He speaks English. So it makes sense to me that they would have tried to put him in this position on this card, but instead we got Teofimo Lopez. And I can't say that I'm disappointed. He just did what he was supposed to do. Like, you have to come out when they put you in these positions where you can get the attention. Like, so there were people watching the fight. Most have never heard of Lopez. What you have to do is seize this opportunity, and you got to not just win your fight, but be impressive. And that's exactly what he did. You know, his little Fortnite dances after were cool, I guess. His backflip was cool. But for the most part, like, this was a solid performance from Lopez. I still think he's probably one of, if not the top prospect in boxing at the moment. He seems to have everything. And unfortunately, when it's going to be a while before we see him in a fight like the Velasco fight, because I think the actual talent that's there is so deep, I guess I'll say, that it's going to take a while before we see how good this guy actually is.
Yeah, I would just say, like, I have to say, this fight shows why Top Rank has the best matchmakers in boxing. Silva, really terrible fighter. If you look up and down his resume, you'll see, like, he has competitive fights against, like, some pretty terrible fighters, like guys he's lost rounds to that he has no business losing rounds to. His big claim to fame, though, was that he'd gone the distance with Felix Verdejo. That gave them a narrative on the broadcast. I mean, they were talking about him going the distance with Felix Verdejo. You know, at the time, by the way, when people saw that fight, they said Verdejo, you know, that was an indication that Verdejo was a bust as a prospect. You know, they had brought him in to get knocked out by Verdejo. And then it was kind of funny that the Top Rank matchmakers got like a do-over. They're like, Verdejo was supposed to knock this guy out. And then they're like, okay, well, Lopez gets to knock him out now. But if you saw how the fight went, like, he was durable enough, so you got to get, like, rack up some rounds of highlight reel footage of Lopez just teeing off on him. He also wasn't, like, excessively sloppy, or, like, you know, he didn't come in with, like, his gut hanging over his trunks. Like, he didn't come in, like, winging wild punches. I mean, you could have fighters who are better than him who sort of look worse aesthetically for the TV cameras. So, yeah, I mean, credit to them on that front. I don't think it really means that much. I mean, this is squarely, I mean, Lopez is 20. I'm not going to criticize him for fighting this level of opposition when he's that young. I don't think it really means that much. I that was more of the point I wanted to make about it more than anything. I think it'll be interesting to see how it develops. I'm not as sold on him as you are. Like, what's the right example here? Carlos Acampo, who fought Errol Spence. If you look at his resume, he has wins like this on his resume. I mean, when he fought Spence, he was still undefeated. Beating up this level of opposition really doesn't mean that much, but it was, you know, it was good for the broadcast. You know, I think that's always, it's nice to have a young undefeated guy on the broadcast. It's just a good part of the storytelling. You have a more experienced guy, and then you have a younger guy who's really up and coming, getting to blow someone out. But yeah, that was really more, I have to say, I feel like they got the maximum out of this relative to the actual quality of competition. So I just, again, credit to the matchmakers at Top Rank for picking Silva out.
I bet Lopez would beat Robert Easter Jr.
Wow, hot take.
It's not a hot take. If you watch the fight, you'll know that he'd beat Robert Easter Jr. If you've ever seen Robert Easter Jr. fight, you know that he'd lose to Lopez.
I mean, I'm going to give that more of a response than it warrants and just say, like, I have my own standards for evaluating prospects. I think you learn different things against different levels of opposition. I mean, this showed that Lopez has speed and power, you know, which are things you can't teach. But it didn't really tell us a lot more than that. I mean, he made a lot of mistakes in the fight. He got tagged. You know, it was total whitewash in terms of the quality of opposition, so I'm not going to criticize him that much for that. There was a moment where he switched to southpaw. They called him out and they said, oh, look, some switch hitting from Lopez. And then he got bopped right in the face, thought better of that, and then switched back. And they didn't comment that he got bopped, you know, as soon as he switched stances. So, yeah, I'm not going to say that this says anything about how he would do at the world level, but yeah, That's my comment on that. Or that's my response to your hot take.
I don't think it's a hot take, but we'll see. When Mikey beats up on on Easter, you'll be like, maybe Easter's not that good. We can move off the fights this weekend and
No Rocky Fielding coverage?
No.
Yeah, please. I'm happy to move on.
I mean, there were a couple of title fights on the Pacquiao undercard that I will say, you know, we don't have to talk about the fight, but so they put Carlos Canizales, a 108-pound champion or 105-pound champion, can't remember. They put him, so he goes to Malaysia, and I would have taken this fight if I was him. Yeah, it's 108 pounds, and he fights Bin Liu, who's 1-0. 1-0 Bin Liu. And Bin Liu is 23 years old. He fought at the 2016 Summer Olympic Games and didn't win anything. So it was red flag number one. He fought one time almost a year ago against an 8-9 opponent and stopped him in three rounds. So naturally, he would fight Carlos Canizales, a 25-year-old Venezuelan, who's, you know, beat at least one legitimate guy, if not arguably two legitimate opponents so far in his career, in Ryoichi Taguchi, who's a really solid fighter, and Reya Konishi, who I'm not sure if he's solid or not. But either way, they fight. And Bin Liu comes out, and he looks solid. Like, he's really quick, and he's pretty accurate with some of his shots. But you could just tell, oh, wow, this is what it looks like when you're, like, a pretty good amateur and lose, like he's not bad at all. But there was, like, a level of awareness that he did not have. He would throw or land, like, a really good straight left and then would not even be aware. Like, it would not be on his radar that a right hook is coming and just get clipped. The guy should have been stopped maybe like the 7th, 8th round or so, but they let it go to the 12th round. Referee stops it with a second to go. And it was just became a beatdown by the end of the fight. Really poor corner work, really poor matchmaking, for Bin Liu's side. If you're Canizales and you got paid to do this, like, you know, I would take that any day of the week, as would you. But that was just, after saying all that, though, it was a really fun fight for maybe like 9 rounds until you started to feel sorry for Bin Liu. So anyway, we move off of that. We could talk about...
Yeah, just thanks for bringing that up, by the way. Yeah, that is one of the funniest things you'll ever see on BoxRec.
Yeah, 1-0.
See the 1-0 fighter fighting in a world title fight at 106, or, you know, 108. They weighed in at 106, but yeah, so
I rated second only to one of the greatest fighters of all time fighting a guy making his professional debut. I got into a really stupid discussion during this fight about how Canizales is not that good, or why, like, he's not that good because if he really was good and Bin Liu was as bad as he looked, or at least as bad as I was saying he was, that Canizales would just pressure him, beat him up, like, pressure him, like, and just force a stoppage. And I'm like, wow, this is just not how boxing works. Like, Canizales has fought professionally 21 times in his career. He's not going to abandon what has worked in his career just because he's in there with the guy who's 1-0. Everyone is dangerous, no matter who you are. Anyway, we can move on from my personal affairs. And so the World Boxing Super Series is going to come to an end. At least the Cruiserweight tournament, that'll come to a completion on Saturday. So I just wanted to just hindsight 2020 thoughts about the tournament. Initially, I'll say that I didn't think it was going to be successful. I thought with no TV coverage. Now, not to say I didn't want it to be successful, because I loved it. I loved the idea. But I was just skeptical that, one, you could get a bunch of promoters to agree to air their fighters on a particular network, and that fights would actually happen when they were supposed to happen, and people wouldn't get injured. You know, basically all the stuff that plagued the Super Six. I thought that would come back. And I'll say that I've also said that it wasn't as successful as people think. We've had this discussion on the podcast before, and I stand by that. Season 2 looks poised to do much better this time around. But overall, I'm happy with the Cruiserweight tournament because the fights have been good. We've seen great fighters. And, you know, at the end of the day, though, it's been predictable. Who didn't predict Usyk versus Gassiev in the end? What about you?
Oh, I mean, well, one, I have to say that's a bold strategy that instead of previewing the finals, we're already doing the post-mortem.
Oh, no, that comes later.
I feel like this might be a better conversation for 1 week from now. I mean, just quick response and quick thoughts on sort of the World Boxing Super Series Cruiserweight Tournament up to this point. I think it's been absolutely fantastic from a fan standpoint. I think it sucks it didn't get U.S. television, which is interesting to see the factors that combine to lead to that. Like Showtime ended up wanting to spend all of their budget on PBC fights, and it looks like, I mean, sort of behind the scenes stuff that's come out since then was that basically that, you know, PBC side of things sort of put the pressure on Showtime, saying like, you know, even though Showtime had had initial discussions with them, like, you know what, why don't you spend your budget? Spend your budget on us, and we'll give you a relative exclusivity for our fights this year.
Well, and they put on good fights, so
let's. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like it. I'm not like saying this is like a sleazy backroom deal. Like, it worked out, but yeah, just saying as far as why it didn't get broadcast. And separately on the HBO side, a lot of people said, oh, people don't want to do business with Richard Schaefer at HBO because they don't want to upset Golden Boy and Canelo's, you know, they want to get that Golden Boy content coming. And I think what you saw instead was that there was no Golden Boy content. And really what it was HBO's budget was even smaller than any of us had realized.
Well, hold on, one little fix there. It's not that there was no content. The content just sucked.
Well, and there was no content. You know, it's like, it's, yeah, a minimal amount of content, and what's been there has been, well, you know, absolutely nothing. So it's not like they had a hole in their budget they were going to fill with this to get fights on their air. I think they just didn't have any money to spend. So even if they had relatively inexpensive, high quality fights, they just weren't going to do that.
Yeah. And that's not Golden Boy's problem. That's HBO's problem.
Yeah. But I mean, this was sort of put on Golden Boy that, but yeah, I think that.
Yeah. And I want to make sure that it's
HBO
not...
Boxing is just dwindling. And, you know, there was that they were never going to have shown this. I mean, and looking back now, hindsight's 2020, I don't think anyone would think they would even be in the running for it. I mean, they certainly weren't in the running for like season two.
No.
Anyway, yeah, just other quick thoughts. I have to say, though, and this relates to like the Regis Prograis situation, I don't think it was a foregone conclusion at all that Gassiev was going to end up in the finals. I mean, he was still relatively unproven at that point when he entered the tournament. He had a good fight with Denis Shafikov, which I think people like me would point to and say, you know what, he's proven a lot. He looked like an impressive prospect, and he's now, you know, crossed the threshold where we say, okay, he looks like he's going to be a guy since he got through that Shafikov fight. But I still think he had to prove a lot up to this point. And, you know, granted, he didn't really have to come through the toughest opposition to get here. But
wait, who are you talking about?
Gassiev.
Okay, so first of all, Denis Shafikov is a lightweight fighter. You're thinking of Denis Lebedev.
Denis Lebedev, excuse me. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up. Shafikov is in... Gassiev's, yeah, sorry. Anyway, yes. Sorry for throwing off the listeners. Yes, I was saying.
Well, very, very unfair of you to just call Russians. You think they're all the same.
I'm going to say a very quick call out. Did you see on social media that Conor McGregor met with Putin? Which is...
No. You follow different social media than I do because I saw that Conor McGregor met with Quavo.
I don't even know who Quavo is.
Nobody here is shocked.
Is that a soccer player?
Bruh. Just stop. Just go on with your Putin story.
Today's the day of the World Cup final. I didn't watch a single game in the World Cup.
I forgot to watch it because I woke up at like 7 a.m. and it came on at 8 here. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll watch this later. And then 8:30 rolls around and I'm like, oh, yeah, the soccer game is on. But then I was like, so I messaged the people in the Discord and I'm like, is the game started yet? And they're like, yeah, it's like 30 minutes in. And I'm like, never mind, I'm not even going to watch it.
Yeah, this is the content people want on the Sunday Boxing podcast. Me making a mistake and then us ending up in a weird digression about not watching the World Cup. Anyway, I've been extremely happy with it. I've been happy to see this journey. I think Usyk came in, a lot of people saw him as number one, then a vision. I think he's continued to prove that. Had fantastic fights along the way. Fight against Bredis was great. Gassiev's fight against Doritos, as I always want to call him. But yeah, Doritos was fantastic. So yeah, this is something fight fans can really look forward to. This has had a great build. It's unquestionably for the number one in the division. Fantastic stuff. Yeah, anyway, further thoughts on this topic? Or
no, I think it's going to be a really interesting fight because while Gassiev doesn't have the speed that Usyk does, Gassiev is going to be able to deal with a lot of what Usyk's going to throw at him. The only way I think this is going to, like, Usyk, and of course, this may go completely in the, like, the one way we didn't expect. Like, Usyk just, like, a one-hitter quitter at some point. But I think that Gassiev, if Usyk doesn't throw lots of, basically, Lomachenko type of punches, if Usyk doesn't do that, Gassiev will counter Usyk, and Usyk should be able to counter Gassiev no matter what. Like, this is going to be a really tough fight for both guys. And whoever wins this fight, like, this is like, this sounds like an ESPN podcast, but like, whoever wins this fight is truly going to not just deserve it, but really also deserve that top spot at cruiserweight. And naturally, obviously, you went through a freaking tournament with literally the top eight guys at cruiserweight. Like, this is the best case scenario of the World Boxing Super Series. Like, and here's the big miss, and it's why I think the World Boxing Super Series was a failure. But if we could replace this, and this is going to be a little hot take here, but the 140-pound tournament doesn't impress me whatsoever. But if you replace that 140 tournament with the cruiserweight, and season two would have this tournament coming out with the fighters who've mentioned at the same point in their careers that they were at when they signed up for the tournament a year ago, people would be thrilled. And 1 year from now, when we get to the final, like, this would be one of the biggest fights in boxing because we would have had the ability to watch them here in America, which we don't have because of the lack of interest in this whole tournament format. But yeah, I do think that that's really all my thoughts. I don't have a way to put a bow on it, so I'll just transition out of it to let's talk about Matchroom. So Tuesday, there's going to be an announcement. The official announcement of all the signings and blah, blah, blah. And here's what we know. Maurice Hooker will be signed, which is interesting because he's going to be fighting Alex Saucedo on ESPN next. Way to lock him up there. Also, it will be a co-promotional deal with Roc Nation. Artur Beterbiev also will be a co-promotional deal with Yvonne Michel. Demetrius Andrade, which will be a full exclusive deal with Matchroom USA, but like, so what?
Quick question. Are these your own notes or was there like a press release I didn't see?
These are things that I've gathered.
Okay. Go on.
Chavez Jr., who no one cares about. I take that back. I'm just kidding. People care about Chavez Jr., but the people who listen to this podcast don't, I'm pretty sure. And then Gabe Rosado, who, whatever. Like, okay, good signings. The Island of the Lost Toys is basically what they're signing. All the people who really don't have a promotional tie, and for a reason, you know? This is like the free agents in the MLB at the moment. We're in the middle of the season. You're not on a team for a reason. And these guys, Maurice Hooker, Artur Beterbiev, Maurice Hooker, who just recently got arrested for a DUI, Artur Beterbiev, who's looked pedestrian against guys he's supposed to knock out, Demetrius Andrade, who is his own worst enemy in his promotional career, not to say he's not a talented fighter, but his path as a professional has been suspect at best. And then you have Chavez Jr. and Gabe Rosado, who are like nice names for 2011. Also, what I know, or what we know, is that the price point is likely going to be $9.99 a month, which is the same price as WWE Network.
Yeah, I was going to say the WWE magic number, $9.99.
And I believe Netflix for a long time was $9.99. So, yeah, that's what I know. And I'll start this off by saying, Tom, you've heard me make this point before, but what a change this has been, because Eddie Hearn started off by saying he was going to take over American boxing and that American boxing promoters don't know what they're doing, can't create stars, et cetera, et cetera. And here he is signing co-promotional deals. Matchroom USA is basically having to borrow these fighters or sign agreements with these fighters' promoters that already exist, with the exception of a couple of them. And he's essentially become a licensor for DAZN, where he will go and grab fights for them so that they can broadcast and put on their network or streaming service, I guess. Much like Bob Arum does when he gets Miguel Burchelt to fight on ESPN Plus. It's not that Burchelt, although he dreamed about fighting on ESPN Plus forever, it's not like he signed or he dreamed of fighting for or. I've gotten to throw myself off here. But it's not like Miguel Burchelt has signed with Top Rank. It's only that they've bought the rights to air the fight, much like Showtime will buy the rights to air a Carl Frampton versus Scott Quigg fight. So what are your thoughts on this? Do you have any predictions? You think they got any more tricks up their sleeve that they're going to bring or throw at us on Tuesday?
Yeah, I was gonna say that at the end is just like a fun capper. It will be fun to see if there are any wild card things here, though. But
Alfredo Angulo too?
Probably will be there. I might be at the event. So, you know, if there's anything exciting, we could report on it. But yeah, we'll see what it ends up being. Alfredo Angulo will be. Well, so, I mean, there's so many elements to this which are crazy. So, I mean, one, yeah, like Maurice Hooker, by the way, just got a DUI last week. Normally, like, what happens is, like, you have a fighter get signed to a big deal, and then they get, like, a DUI afterwards because they're partying a little too hard. This is the first time I've heard of someone getting a DUI and then getting a deal immediately after that. And by the way, it's like the most hilarious DUI of all time. For those of you who haven't heard it, just some quick hits. He was followed by a police car, then crashed into a squad car that was being used to redirect traffic around a construction zone. As a result of that, the police car following Hooker then crashed into another police car that was at the site. Two police officers were hospitalized, one with a broken arm, and then as a final capper, Hooker was charged with unlawful possession of a handgun because he had an illegal handgun with him at the time that he was causing this demolition derby. So very strange. Yeah, I mean, it really just explains, as your point of like this being like the island of misfit toys, I think was the appropriate term that you used. I mean, you have Demetrius Andrade, who continually, I mean, this is about the sixth time in his career that he's signed or gotten into a promotional agreement that has disrupted a fight which had previously been signed. He was supposed to fight Jermell Charlo at one point. That fell through because he was trying to do something with Roc Nation. He was originally supposed to fight Arizlandi Lara on the big Showtime 154-pound triple header last fall, where Lara instead had to fight a much worse opponent. He was supposed to fight on HBO, which would seem to make sense that he would be on HBO if you think he ultimately wants to be an opponent for Golovkin or Canelo. But instead, you know, who's he going to fight? I mean, Jacobs is under the Matchroom USA banner, but I don't know. I mean, is that really the gold at the end of the rainbow, that he's going to get a fight with Danny Jacobs on DAZN after Jacobs' HBO deal ends? I mean, it's just a lot of curious things. I mean, you have Gabriel Rosado. So, okay, is Gabriel Rosado going to fight Jacobs and Andrade? You have Artur Beterbiev, who has no opponents. You have Chavez Jr., who is signed but might never fight again. I mean, he hasn't shown any dedication to the sport. His Instagram continues to be just, you know, indicate that his personal life is a disaster. So very, very strange and a million miles away from, you know, we did that whole hour-long podcast after I went to the kickoff press conference. They were saying, you know, this is the takeover, billion-dollar deal, all that. And really what it has ended up seeming to be, I mean, I think you sort of left out a major point here is, as far as Matchroom is concerned, this is still the home for all of their UK fights. So it's looking more and more like Top Rank.
Nobody cares about them.
Well, right. But so Matchroom probably got a sweet deal to broadcast their UK fights. And then they had this weird partnership with DAZN, which it seems like, you know, I don't think the $1 billion got divided up equally between, you know, Maurice Hooker and Gabe Rosado. And, you know, hard to say how much money was even dedicated to these fights. I mean, and that's the thing. These are just the A sides. Who is going to fight Artur Beterbiev, and how much are you going to pay that person, right?
Callum
I mean,
Johnson.
If he fights the number 50 light heavyweight, okay, great. So you're going to pay that guy $20,000? Like, I mean, where's this $1 billion he was talking about? I mean, it's a completely ridiculous situation. But yeah, so again, maybe this was a lot of misdirection and we got hoodwinked by it. I mean, I think in our defense, I said at the time, and you agreed with, that this was a lot of speculation. There was a lot of hyperbole without a lot of hard evidence as far as what this deal would end up being. So it's looking more and more like most of what the Matchroom deal is going to be is going to be their UK fights. They're going to have a handful of really underwhelming US fights, which again, it's like Maurice Hooker might be in jail. You know, Chavez Jr. might never fight again. Artur Beterbiev, I don't know. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, he just had this lawsuit ongoing with Yvonne Michel that he seemed to have lost. So I guess if Yvonne Michel wants to put Beterbiev on DAZN, I mean, I can't imagine why that would happen. I mean, it would make much more sense that Beterbiev would end up against Michelle's other guys. So this deal is bonkers. I would love to see what happens to the press conference. I have to say, in other non-Matchroom USA DAZN deal, they have a deal with Bellator. Okay, that's going to deliver real content. They have a deal with the World Boxing Super Series. That's going to deliver real content. I mean, really, the piece which is just, you know, they have the Matchroom USA fights, which we don't care about, but those are real fights. Really, just the piece which has kind of been a circus is the Matchroom USA component, which was, again, the entire point of this $1 billion takeover press conference. So we'll see if come Tuesday, you know, Eddie Hearn is redeemed, but probably not.
Here's how I think this will be spun, because Eddie Hearn's a master at spinning. That's the reason why he's successful, is because this guy can talk his way around anything. And the way this will get redeemed is that we announce these, you know, mid-level signings. And the interesting thing is that he talked a big game about all of the top fighters that, you know, the most charismatic free agents out there. You know, like the guys that if we were going to we had first pick of any fighter that wasn't signed up right now to a exclusive promotional deal. None of those guys that we would be picking with our first 5, 6, 7, 8 picks, none of those guys were convinced to go to Hearn stable. But that will all be irrelevant, because he'll announce the final thing, which will be that Anthony Joshua's next fight will be on DAZN here in America for streaming. And I think that's the thing that you use. And it's, Anthony Joshua is the ultimate bargaining chip at this point for Eddie Hearn, and that's how he'll position it. One other thing with Andrade, just thinking about his career going forward, is he's been ordered to fight Billy Joe Saunders.
Oh yeah, that was kind of a major point we left out. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I don't think it's a major thing, because my initial thought was like, oh, Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren, they don't do business. Yeah, I think they will for this one, because usually what they're competing for is UK broadcasting. And Andrade is not a draw in the UK whatsoever. Neither is Billy Joe Saunders, for that matter, as far as I know. But certainly he's a bigger draw than Demetrius Andrade. And I think that Eddie would be willing to concede UK broadcast rights if it means that he gets to put this fight, Billy Joe Saunders, Demetrius Andrade, on DAZN in America. I think this is one of these scenarios where we could see one of Frank's guys pop up on a Matchroom branded card, because it makes sense. This is a win for Eddie, and I think Eddie at this point, and we've seen this with other I can't think of a good comparison or example, but we've seen where early in deals, this is like not apples to apples, but like a PlayStation View or a YouTube TV, things that operate at a loss early because they know that they have to make that deal work out with consumers, you know, ultimately things
will
even out.
Customer acquisition costs are always very high when you launch a platform.
Yeah. But the cost here is pride. You know, there's certainly a monetary cost that Eddie will feel not broadcasting this in the UK on Sky Sports. However, if his bigger goal, and I think that's what we have to look at with Eddie Hearn, is if his bigger goal really is taking over America and based off of what he said. We have to believe that that's at least his intention. That's not necessarily what will happen, but that's his intention. I think it's logical to assume that he would be willing to let this fight air on BT Sport if it means that it gets to be on DAZN here in America. And it has to be, because no one else is probably going to really put out a fair bid for this fight. I mean, I can't see Top Rank saying or shooting the locks off the wallet and saying, oh yeah, we must get this fight. Billy Joe Saunders and Demetrius Andrade is going to break all ESPN Plus records. So that's just one thing that I was thinking of earlier. Because initially, I was like, oh man, this means that we're going to see more nonsense with that WBO belt. I think it's a WBO belt, because Andrade is not going to, you know, because, you know, there's certainly enough nonsense with the whole IBF eliminator in the heavyweight division, but that's a story that I'm not even willing to talk about. So one example of this, that's not an example. Go on, you can go.
I mean, that's not a bad fight. And yeah, that actually, like, assuming that fight does end up on its own, you know, fine, you know, that makes sense that they have Demetrius Andrade. By the way, yeah, that's a fight I'm interested in. I don't think it's a given who wins that fight.
999 is super fair too. I want to say that.
Yeah, well, they've got a huge amount of other content. And again, saying like the Matchroom USA part of this is a small part of it. I mean, that's something separate. I mean, that DAZN has to worry about. We don't know what the other content is, but I will buy it for the World Boxing Super Series. That's fine. You know, they got me. I mean, that's a very large number of fight cards, because you have three tournaments, and each one of the tournaments has quite a number of fight cards associated with it. So right there, I mean, that's already much better than what HBO's, you know, boxing lineup is going to be for 2019, without question. So,
well, I'll get it because I don't know any better.
That's a good reason too.
Kell Brook is injured, and so he is being pulled off of what was already a pretty pathetic card. The Dillian White, Joseph Parker card, which is just totally not pay-per-view worthy. I mean, I say that, okay? And this is something that can annoy me at times with British fans who speak on American, like what Americans think and how they feel and blah, blah, blah. When it's like, okay, hold up, guys. You ain't from here. And if you traffic on Reddit exclusively or Twitter, that fan base is not representative of the boxing fan base on the whole. Not at all. However, I do think I have some insight, because I speak to some Brit haters as well as Brit lovers from the UK, and I just don't think that this, nobody really saw this as a good card. Dillian White is another example of Eddie Hearn's brilliance when it comes to spinning and pushing out a narrative. But Kell Brook is injured, so that means he's off this card, which means that Chris Eubank Jr. is most likely going to fill in as one of the co-main events, which I'm pretty sure is more enticing for you, Tom, since you're a big fan, but not for me.
Oh, God. Ugh. Yeah, I've been a hater. Hater of Chris Eubank since way back. I want to air out an old conspiracy theory.
Sure.
Is that what you want, a good Tom Cody conspiracy theory?
Oh, it's not mine, right? If it was mine, I'd feel some type of way about that.
But... oh, yeah. Well, so this is a whole... okay, so Kell Brook injured, taken off the card, right? Okay, so...
you think Amir Khan stabbed him again?
No. So Amir Khan with that machete back... okay, so there's... let's go back a little more than a year ago. Errol Spence fighting Kell Brook. There was a very weird situation that happened in the lead up to that fight. So it was already announced that the fight was going to be drug tested. There was a weird thing that happened in the U.S. boxing media. A lot of people in the U.S. boxing media said, you know, I have strong indication that the fight is going to be called off between Kell Brook and Errol Spence. This is about, I don't know, 2 months out, 6 weeks out, something like that. And it was going around, and it turned out that there were some texts that people were saying were from Eddie Hearn. And the text said, and, you know, they seem very plausible, so I don't know who, you know, if this was a hoax or if this really was from Eddie Hearn, but the text said that we are going to demand VADA testing. Errol Spence is going to claim an injury and drop out so he does not end up in the testing pool, because Errol Spence can't pass a VADA test. Something to that effect. I've
done the same thing before, so I understand.
Shot it, and this was like, you know, a bunch of U.S. boxing writers were kind of insinuating this, and it turned out this was the source, that this was purported to be Eddie Hearn's text about this topic. Instead, what happened was the next week, Errol Spence signed up for VADA and the fight went on. You know, it just was like a non-issue. Very strange situation here that there are a lot of suspicion about PED use coming out of Kell Brook's gym. A bunch of fighters have tested positive. Kell Brook, you know, went up to 154, which, you know, granted, he was big at 147. So I wouldn't say 160. There's... Well, he went up to 160 and then came back down. But I wouldn't say there's
that
much
of him.
Suspicion around. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, exactly. Dominic Ingle posts a lot of... I know what you're talking about. I don't want to get too much into the gory details, but Dominic Ingle posts a lot of eyebrow-raising stuff on his Instagram that would indicate that, you know, he is probably using something. And, you know, again, a bunch of his fighters have popped. So anyway, I'd say Kell Brook specifically, I don't want to slander him. You know, I don't have any evidence against him. He was a big guy at 147, so it's not crazy that he's fighting at 154 now. It's not like a Pacquiao situation or something, you know, shooting up 50 weight classes. But... you know, it was announced. There was a lot of pressure for him to enter VADA. He said, I'm entering VADA. And then immediately an injury is announced, which would remove him from the testing pool. So very strange that this ended up playing. I mean, I'm really not accusing him of anything. It's just bizarre that a year ago there was this weird conspiracy theory. There were texts that were purported to be from Eddie Hearn, and like a lot of boxing writers – you know, indicated that they, you know, this was from Eddie Hearn, that he was circulating this rumor that, you know, Spence is going to drop out, just see, he's not going to sign the VADA paperwork. And then, you know, that scenario plays out exactly related to Kell Brook leading up to this fight. So just very strange that ended up happening. I believe him that it's a real injury. I'm not going to claim that this is because it's because of drug testing. I just, you know, it's just a bizarre thing that happened. This is what happens when you follow boxing reporting very closely. You see these weird parallels come up. Anyway, I really don't have anything more to say about Kell Brook or that card. I mean, it's a terrible card. I don't know. I mean, is it even announced who's showing it in the U.S.? I guess probably that would be maybe ESPN Plus, right?
Since I haven't heard any news about a U.S. broadcast of this card.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Strange because now, like, Anthony Joshua is locked up on DAZN, so, like, Showtime you'd think maybe would show it, or, like, HBO showed Dillian White's last fight, but, you know, no one really has a reason to now because they're not in the Anthony Joshua sweepstakes anymore.
Yeah, and exactly, and that's what points to what I was saying earlier, how the ultimate bargaining chip in boxing, at least that isn't Canelo, because I would imagine Canelo is a far bigger bargaining chip. But the biggest one is... for sure, Anthony Joshua. And it's why you saw a stupid fight like Dillian White versus Lucas Brown. No matter how cheap it was, that one got broadcasted on HBO when it had no business being broadcasted.
Well, okay, two quick things. One, he's the most sought-after commodity if you want to get 300,000 people to watch your premium cable broadcast on a Saturday.
So is Clarissa Shields.
Yeah, for like one-tenth the amount of money and even more viewers. So, yeah, I would definitely buy on Clarissa Shields before I would on Anthony Joshua's U.S. broadcasts. So, yeah, I mean, there's sort of a ridiculous situation anyway that people have valued his current status in the U.S. so highly and have spent so much money on those fights. But, yeah, I mean, agreed. That's like, where is this going to end up? Like, the whole reason that people were dancing around showing those fights was to get Anthony Joshua and, yeah, he's on DAZN now, so it's hard to imagine that the U.S. So this will even be broadcast in the U.S. Also, I think it's hilarious. I just want to say BoxRank's algorithm ranks Dillian White above Joseph Parker somehow and has them at respectively 8 and 9 in the division, which is probably about right. But, you know, somehow this will produce the number one contender for Anthony Joshua's next fight, apparently. So anyway. Yeah, I'm definitely done with that topic.
What do you think about the new, at least a 140-pound bracket for the World Boxing Super Series? We have Anthony Yigit, Kirill Relic, Ivan Baranchik, Regis Progre, Josh Taylor, Edward Troyanovsky, who's fresh out of a convalescent home, Ryan Martin, and Terry Flanagan.
I like it a lot. I mean, I know you said... I think you've been kind of down on this, but yeah, it's really almost, I mean, it's a weird division. It's almost like a tournament of fights that should be on Showbox. But I'm all for it. I think it's going to be really fun. I think, it'll be fun. Yigit's, adopted fighter, Reddit Boxing's own, Anthony Yigit, Weird seeing Troyanovsky brought back from the grave, by the way. But yeah, I mean, I think Josh Taylor, really promising guy. I think I'm higher on him than you are. Regis Progre, we both like. We've already talked about on this podcast. Kirill Relic looked, you know, really hard to say how much we're supposed to learn about his fights against Rancis Barthelemy, but, you know, he's a guy there. I think one name, it's unfortunate, Sergey Lipinets didn't end up in. I think he definitely would have been a lot more appealing than Troyanovsky. I mean, he's at least durable. I think he could have given good fights for these guys. But
he's going to 147, though. So,
well, because he didn't get in. Yeah, he very publicly complained about not getting into the tournament.
That's a damn shame, too, because Lipinets is better than most of these guys here.
Yeah, I think I would probably rank him in the top four out of these guys. And yeah, it kind of sucks. He's just not in it.
He's better than Relic. He's better than
Yiga. Only lost better than Mikey Baranchik. Garcia. So. I would pick him to beat those guys for
he's
sure.
He's a tough fight for Progre and Taylor. He beats Troyanovsky. He beats Martin, and he beats Flanagan. He probably knocks out half of these guys.
Yeah, I don't. Definitely. I don't think, and I don't think like he would get knocked out by Progre or Taylor. So. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they didn't want him in because he'd be a little bit of a spoiler. Like, he already has that loss on his record. He's not going to come out of this as a star, whereas Taylor or Progre definitely could come out of this as potential stars. So
maybe, I mean, just a thought. I haven't done any research, so I could be wrong. But is it possible they didn't want anyone coming off of a loss in the tournament? I know Lipinets fought recently, but I don't think he would have fought.
Metric. I don't know. I mean, I have a hard time believing it's that very specific reason. I mean, yeah, I could be. I don't know. I think probably the other fighters, they had specific reasons in terms of like, we want to get broadcasting in Russia. Okay, well, the people with Russia TV would prefer for like Troyanovsky to end up in it. You know, and you have Lipinets, who's kind of like a PBC guy, and who's, you know, pretty low on the totem pole within that organization. That's not going to help get, you know, anything related to TV rights. So, it's probably more has to do with that, that like there were reasons in terms of the promoters they're partnering with and the different TV deals they're trying to set up that the other guys served a purpose. But yeah, I agree that that's really a shame. But, you know, what can you do? At the same time, I still would have favored Josh Taylor and Progre over him. Maybe Taylor, I would say that'd be a close fight with Lipinets. Yeah, definitely a shame he's not in it, but I don't think we need to spend any more time on that.
Moving on, Danny Garcia and Sean Porter is likely to happen on September 8th with Benavidez and Durrell being the undercard. I think we've already talked about this. We don't really need to get into that.
Yeah, we've talked about the fight separately. I mean, it's just kind of news that it was announced for the Barclays Center as a doubleheader. I think originally we weren't sure what broadcast the Benavidez card was going to end up on. I mean, it's more, these details are more interesting to me because I'm going to be covering the fight. So like, it's cool that I get to see that. It's another good pair of fights for Showtime.
And then, Roman Gonzalez, who I'm sure everyone wants to see fight again, is very likely going to return on the Canelo Golovkin undercard, which, you know, stop me if you've heard this one before. And he's probably going to fight an opponent that they're going to bring up a couple of weight classes because he's done. And Roman Gonzalez might win. He's certainly going to look like a shell of himself. And, you know, good for him, I guess. I don't really have much to say about this fight, but I really don't want to see Roman Gonzalez fight anymore. For his own sake.
Well, very quick take on this. Do you think at this point there will be another Superfly card?
No.
Because, yeah, Rungvisai, who has, you know, gone through, I think, even new name changes since the last time we called him Rungvisai, is now going to be fighting on this like mixed like MMA boxing promotion thing.
Yeah, I saw that.
So he's probably not even going to end up back in the U.S. And, you know, he's the guy who should be the A side of Superfly based on the guys that he's beaten in his last two fights. But he's not going to be a part of that. So, yeah, I mean, what can you even say? I mean, who wants to see Roman Gonzalez fight anymore? I mean, he's, you know, expired milk at this point. It just, who cares?
Exactly.
But that speaks to the quality that, you know, I mean, that just makes me cringe thinking who else is even going to be on the Canelo Golovkin undercard. I mean, if he's there, I mean, how much worse even is it going to get beyond that?
So I'm going to move on from this because,
sure.
Nothing interesting about that, really. And we can get into the fights next week. Jaime Munguia will defend. This feels like we just talked about him like 2 weeks ago. Will defend his newly won super welterweight title against Liam Smith. And this is so like this is a tough fight
I
because
am
like
intrigued by this fight, I must say.
yeah, me too. Because it's like okay, Munguia looked pretty solid, but you were fighting Saddam Ali, and Liam Smith looked okay in his career, but he's not that good. But there's a balance here. These guys have got to meet in the middle somewhere, and it's just who's a little better. And I legitimately am not quite sure. Like, you can't say with any confidence one guy's better than the other. Like, what are you leaning on? For Liam Smith, it's experience. It's the fact that he's boxed longer and fought maybe a slightly higher level of opposition. And for Munguia, it's like, oh, well, he seems to have a lot more power than Liam Smith, and that could change the fight.
Yeah, I think it really, I mean, it's a question. We know Liam Smith's level. I mean, he's extremely baked in where he is, which is not a super high level. At the same time, still a huge amount unknown with Munguia. I think Munguia, I could see him knock out Liam Smith, and from my perspective, he still wouldn't necessarily have told that much because I think Smith is vulnerable enough. And there have been public reports and behind the scenes reports that he's had huge troubles making 154. The Saddam Ali fight fell through because he couldn't make weight. I think there was a separate public explanation, but I heard that from someone who was in his
Apparently, he
camp
got
at a.
sick.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that from someone at his camp in his camp at the Lomachenko Linares card. There was someone there who was talking about that. And he had one of his fights with Liam Williams or a fight date with Liam Williams where he didn't make weight. So, who knows? I mean, I don't think Liam Smith is very good. He's, British domestic scene, or possibly a touch ahead of that. I mean, if you want to give him credit for fighting for the WBO title. I'm curious to see, though. I mean, it's really a question. I mean, Munguia is still young. He's not very experienced. He's just 21. So, yeah, it would definitely be pretty cool if he comes and knocks out Liam Smith. That would make him an exciting player at 154. Probably won't end up fighting those guys, but that would instantly make him a candidate to fight Canelo or Golovkin at 160. So, yeah, definitely want to see the outcome of this. I think.
Yeah.
The unlikely, the very, very, I mean, it's sad to say this, but the most likely outcome is that it will end up being kind of a boring decision fight, and we'll realize like Munguia is just like not actually that good, and Liam Smith is just kind of able to kind of nullify his offense. But yeah, I'm holding out. I mean, really, the excitement here is if Munguia comes and knocks out Smith. Like, that would be really fun.
On the undercard, we have Alberto Machado returning against an opponent, Mensah, I believe is his last name. I didn't write down his full name, and now I've forgotten it. I think Vic Mensah or something. Either way, this is a really easy fight for Machado for the specific reason that Machado has not looked good. He's probably one of the weakest title holders in the entire sport, and that's including Jaime Munguia, who's fighting on the card.
This top-notch HBO quality fights HBO is bringing us.
Yeah, that's what I expect from them.
Just bizarre. HBO is still even, are they in the 130-pound division? I mean, are they going to try to show like a Burchell fight? Like, I don't know what the game is here, trying to show the Machado fight. I mean, he's still undefeated, but looks extremely. I mean, yeah, he does not pass the eye test at all.
I don't know this for sure, but my guess is that HBO either A wants to maintain at least some boxing presence without spending a lot of money, because obviously they don't have a lot of money to spend at this moment, especially when they were caught up in the merger. But also, so it's either that or they're in a holding pattern and they were just spending what little they could while in the merger. Sorry, I just said the same thing two times. But they're basically trying to maintain some presence in boxing while they figure out what's next. They don't like, I can imagine that maybe they're just not sure with the new management coming in, what future boxing has. And it's possible that maybe boxing is out, or it's possible that they're gonna just double down and say we got to take what we can. And obviously we have, a long reputation of being the gold standard of boxing, and we can easily get that back by buying a few fights. Like, we have the best production. So I think that could possibly be something. And the other option is like, hey, we have dates to fulfill. And once these are out, then you're basically looking at a pay-per-view provider for Canelo and maybe a few other fights that could be on pay-per-view. But for the most part, we're not here to show like the boxing in between big events. We're just a big event provider. I could see that also being what's going on. But I think the most likely scenario is that they're just not sure what the future is with their budget and what they have to work with. Based off of the quotes, though, from Bob Stanky?
Stanky.
I think that's his first name. I might have his first name wrong. But it seems like they haven't figured it out yet. But when they do figure it out, they're leaning towards really sticking with the things that actually bring them subscribers.
John Stanky, by the way.
John. I wanted to go with John first, but I was like, maybe it's not John. Everyone's named John. That's really my take on the whole HBO situation. And I don't blame HBO for this fight. You would have to look at Golden Boy. But Munguia Smith is a solid fight, I think. Obviously both guys aren't great.
Yeah.
But you don't have to have two great fighters fighting to have a great fight. You could have two bad fighters and it's still great. We can move on. The Murat Gassiev. We already basically talked about the Gassiev and Usyk fight. Is there anything else that you wanted to say that maybe you didn't say earlier?
I have nothing more to say about it.
Okay, I don't have anything more to say about this fight either, other than I really like Gassiev, but I also really love Usyk, and so I don't care how this fight plays out. That's it. Thanks for listening this week. I have a week with nothing to do, so I'll be working on more podcast stuff. So if you haven't subscribed to Patreon, that would probably be a good time, like at least just for this week. I might put out maybe 6 to 7 podcasts, depending on what there is to talk about. For sure, there will be an exclusive one on whatever the announcement that you at Matchroom USA Days In has to tell us, whether they're confirming or changing what we already know. Who knows? And so that's that. One question. Are they drafting or picking their opponents? Because I know they're doing the World Boxing Super Series press conference this week as well.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, for the next season, yes.
Yeah, that might be its own podcast, thinking of the matchups.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's going to be really fun seeing how they rank if Prograde does end up being number one at 140. Yeah, that's going to be fun.
I think
also,
Relic's going to be number one, but go on.
Yeah, that's a hot take. Do you have you heard any indication? They keep saying there are going to be three weight classes. Any indication of what the third weight class is? I don't know what's going on with that. Just again?
Yeah, I think it's cruiserweight.
Really?
I've heard that there's a couple of fighters that are already signed.
Oh, just to do more fights at cruiserweight?
I believe it'll be like a lower tier version of, but that's what I've heard, but who
like
knows if that's true.
AO. Interesting. Yeah, I just hadn't heard that yet. Yeah, I would expect that would need to be announced soon because everything keeps saying they're doing three tournaments. I just haven't heard signings. I think I'm pretty much talked out at this point. I'm feeling the soreness in my throat that starts to come up around this time every week. Do you have any other topics you want to
add? Yeah, that's because never mind. Listeners know what I was about to say. Thanks for listening. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast and share it, that really helps out. Like if you like the podcast, you want to do something to help, share the podcast, definitely listen, subscribe, write a review. A review also helps let people know that this is a good podcast. It's probably a good podcast in your opinion, if you've reached this point and you're hearing this, because I know I don't listen to full pod. Actually, that's not true. I have a podcast that I'm listening to right now that I'm pretty sure I don't like, but I'm listening to it because I know it's interesting. At least the content is interesting that I should probably know, but I think the podcast is boring. But enough about maybe my personal struggles. That's something we could talk about another day. If you're on Discord, send me a message on Discord. Love to talk to you, get your thoughts on the podcast. If you have feedback or you have questions, or maybe you say, I have a topic that you guys should talk about, let me know. That's it for this week. Tom, anything you want to say before I hang up on you?
Oh, are you still planning to do the mailbag this week?
Yeah, I am.
Maybe people still have time to get some questions in. No, just definitely check out Usyk Gassiev. I think if you're listening to this, we don't need to tell you that. But yeah, this is definitely one of the best matchups of the year. Can't wait for it.
And I can't wait to tell everyone every week to sign up for Days In for $9.99 a month.
Yeah, bring back those old WWE gifts. $9.99.